The Fan on Demand. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, glory kickboxing, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. I'll be joined later on by Mike Bond, who will break down the upcoming Dublin card on Saturday on UFC Fight Pass. We'll also take a look at yesterday's exceptional card that went down in Atlantic City, where Donald Cerrone took out Jim Miller in the main event. We'll also hear from glory welterweight champion based out of Toronto, Joseph Valtellina Bazooka Joe. But without further ado, an absolute honor for the very first time to be joined on UFC Central by Conor McGregor, the man that Dana White and I talk about all the time as having the it factor. Mr. McGregor, how are you today?
I'm very good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Now, considering you're just days away from making weight, and I'm sure you're not feeling too good with the weight cut, how are you feeling, by the way?
I'm coming to the end of the mail. It's almost time. 24 hours, I'll be on the scales, and I'll be beginning my rehydration, but I was prepared for it, you know. I knew it would be a tough week with media, the media frenzy and everything going on, and then I'm probably making weight. So that's why, you know, I prepared. I brought my weight down. I'm as low as I've ever been at this stage. It was tough, of course. It's always tough, but I'm a pro. I rehydrate correctly. I do it professionally. And Saturday night, I will go in and perform.
Now, Saturday night, you're headlining a card in Dublin. I mean, your hometown, and having known George St. Pierre as long as I have, I understand the pressures that go with headlining an event, and George has done it so many times. When you look at what you've done for your country, for your city, is that motivation? Is it extra pressure on your shoulders, or is it just, you know what, I've got to do my job on Saturday night?
No, it's definitely used as motivation, you know. George St. Pierre, his country got behind him, you know, like my country's getting behind him, and I believe next year it's a football stadium also, you know, 80,000 Crow Park, I believe I would sell. I believe I would have sold it this time around, but I would sell it next year, no problem, and be the highest UFC attendance. That's what I'm looking for also, you know. I want to win everything, absolutely everything. The belts, the attendance, I even wanted to win the media workout yesterday.
I saw some of the video with all the media there. I mean, that must be absolutely insane for a guy like yourself that finally reaches the big show and then it explodes even further right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm never happy. You know, I didn't come in to be just another guy. I knew as soon as I got my opportunity, as soon as I got one shot in that UFC, I was going to grab it by the neck and make my mark, you know, and let it be known that I'm coming to take out everybody in that division.
Now, a lot of guys have been pointing fingers at you in the division, and, you know, we call it hate sometimes, and I thought to myself, well, listen, Conor's doing what he has to do. He's following in the mold of a Chael Sonnen and a Muhammad Ali and a Floyd Mayweather. He's doing the right things to hype up his fights. Do you kind of laugh at some of the guys in the division, or do you understand why they're pointing fingers and saying, hey, you know what, why is the UFC behind this guy and not me?
I don't really care about the other guys in the division. They don't exist, you know. And I don't care about anyone else either. You know, I have my small circle of people that I listen to, and no one's seen all out of that circle, you know. So I have tunnel vision for this, and anyone in my way would be taken out. It's not it's business. It's not personal.
The one thing that I like about your camp is you represent the Straight Blast Gym, and it's one of those, you know, systems that many people don't really appreciate, don't know, and don't understand, but it is a hardcore system. They don't mess around in anywhere of the Straight Blast Gyms around the world. Can you describe what it's like training under the system?
Yeah, no, the Straight Blast Gym is a phenomenal gym. My head coach, John Carman, is a genius when it comes to this game. You know, the intricacies to detail, you know, the attention to detail he has in all of these movements, and he just say one little thing, one little shift of momentum, and the whole thing changes, you know. So I am blessed to have to meet John and study under John, and then obviously John's coaches in Portland, Oregon, Matt Condon, who is the founder of SPG. It's just a great gym. It's a phenomenal gym.
Now, you did your training camp, and the majority of it, I believe, in Iceland with Gunnar Nelson and the team out there. There's a different way of life in Iceland as in comparison to Dublin or in Ireland or even in Canada. They're very calm out there. How did you deal with that? Because you're not exactly a calm guy. You're very energetic.
Yeah, you know, it's perfect for me. Exactly. It brings you down. It's good to get away from everyone. Isolation. The air is fresh. The food is good. The training is even better. And it was just perfect. It made sense. We have an affiliation with Milner and Gunnar Nelson, of course, has been a long-time teammate of mine. Sometimes they come over to us, sometimes we go over to them. It just made sense to go over to them with the fight being in Dublin and all of the hype around at the minute. You know, it was perfect. It couldn't have went better.
You're listening to UFC Central right now. On the line with us is Conor McGregor. Follow Conor online via Twitter, at TheNotoriousMMA. You can also follow him on Instagram. Follow yours truly, at Showdown Joe. Now, in terms of prepping for a guy like Diego Brandão, one of the things I kind of figured out, and whenever you speak about your opponents, is you're not really concerned about your opponent. You're more concerned about what you bring to the octagon. Is that the same case with Diego?
Yeah, I went into the same, you know, 3 weeks ago it was Carl, you know, so anything can happen in this game. So if you focus on anybody other than yourself, it can shift your top lane because the opponent can change at any given moment. But as far as Diego, you know, I believe I'm too fast with him, and the speed is what will ultimately lead his downfall.
The beauty of some of your post-fight comments whenever you emerge victorious is the fact that your opponents get emotional, but you don't get emotional. But this is Dublin on Saturday night. This is your hometown. This is your people. You're repping Ireland. You're repping the Fighting Irish. How do you keep your emotions in check and not get overly inflamed and say to myself, I can't screw up here?
I don't dwell on that. Exactly. This is my hometown. This is my... I live here. I've been here all my life, so why wouldn't I be comfortable? Why wouldn't I be calm? It's no different than everyday life for me at the minute, you know? So this is just another day for me. Saturday night is just another day of being what I do every other day. I step inside that octagon and I look to perform. It's another day.
You're a firm believer that your bloodline goes back to the 17th century with the warriors on the battlefield. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, 100%. I truly believe that the McGregor name, all you got to do is search up that McGregor name with long history in Scotland back in the day, you know, when we fought off the British invaders in the war-torn Scottish Highlands, you know, back on horseback, you know what I mean, swinging pickaxes, and those days, you know, I firmly believe that one thing I will do before my day is up, I will trace my roots and prove that where I come from is where I believe I came from, you know. I believe there's warrior spirit inside me, and I believe I'm doing what my ancestors were doing in this day and age.
Now, when I take a look at you fight, Conor, as my job as an analyst, I have to disseminate, you know, what a fighter brings to the octagon, the positives and negatives, and I look at you and I think to myself, I don't even think you've reached your potential yet. I think there's so much time, so much room to grow, especially considering your age. I still think you're 3 years away from reaching your potential. If you could be a third party and analyze yourself, how far away are you from reaching your potential?
You have to believe that you are already there, you know. You have to believe that you are already the man. I already feel like I am already unbeatable right now, you know what I mean? The progress I've made in the last 5 years has been, you know, I just feel like a new man. And even more so, the progress I've made since the Holloway fight, since the injury, I am a new animal, a different kind of animal now than I was before. You know, I look back at the Holloway fight and I hate it. I don't like the fight at all, you know. I'm looking forward to showcasing the new and improved me on Saturday night. You know, a lot of people can come back from an ACL, but not a lot of people can. The list gets shorter when you start saying who came back better than they left. I am one of those guys that came back better than they were before.
The beauty of mixed martial arts when you step into the cage and the referee steps out of the way is to just let the fight be what it is. But if you have a fight, a perfect fight on Saturday night versus Diego Brandão, that'll show Dana White, Joe Silva, Sean Sherber that, you know what, this guy may need to leapfrog a few people to get that title shot. What is the perfect fight for Conor McGregor?
100%. I'm going in there to leapfrog. You know, I'm going to make it clear that we can keep giving me these rookies and we can keep doing the rookie bounce, or we can skip the kill, which is what I want, and ultimately get that belt. That is what I'm here for, the gold and the money.
The knee. Talk to me about the knee. I'm sure it's at 100% right now, but how are you feeling, you know, when you first started training camp to where you are today?
Yeah, I feel really, really good right now. You know, like I said before, I'm better than before. I'm better than I left. The rehab went better than I could ever have asked for. The UFC put me up with the best physiotherapy, the best surgeon. The surgeon was like literally world champion. If there was a world title for surgery, knee surgery, this guy was the world champion. The same was said for my physiotherapy. It went absolutely amazing, and I feel better than ever. It's good to be back. It's good to be home. It's good to be back.
Well, it's not just good to be back. You also look good. And it's one of the things that George and I talked about early in his career, the importance of looking good when you're in front of the media, especially during the pre-fight and post-fight press conference. I really appreciate, as a guy who wears suits all the time on television, you're always styling and profiling with your suits. Talk about that new sort of look in your life. As you know, before you got to the UFC, you were talking about being broke, and now you've got like 10 suits or something like that.
Yeah, I've got a hell of a lot more suits than that now, my friend. But, you know, if there's ever a time to wear a suit, it's a press conference. Press conference is when you wear a suit. You know, you don't go to a press conference without a suit. That makes no sense to me, you know. I'm not walking around here with suits 24/7 of the day, you know. There's an event, but there's a reason. You best believe I'm coming prepared, you know. I'm professional here, you know. I'm here to conduct business.
All right, one final question before we let you go, and I have a challenge for you outside of the octagon with Gunny. How do we get a little bit of Conor McGregor into the profile, into the personality of Gunnar Nelson, so when he gets in front of a mic, he can get out there a little bit, because he's such a calm guy. People don't understand it. They're like, he doesn't say much. Well, that's Gunnar Nelson. Can you give him some advice and say, Gunnar, come on, man, you got to come out and speak a little more?
You know, Gunnar is his own man. We are different people, you know, so I can't say to him, you know, Gunnar's perfect. He is a polar opposite, you know, but that is his appeal. That he has that appeal, and I have my own appeal, you know. It is the ultimate performance is what I care about, so that I don't really care about any other stuff.
How long do you think he's in a title mix in the welterweight division?
He would beat the champion right now, but, you know, this, I'm going to... If he doesn't say it with the title, I'm going to say it for him. You know, he's more than ready for that welterweight strap. There's no doubt about it. I believe they'll give him top 10 next.
That does.
He's right on the top with me. We're side by side in this.
Listen, we want to wish you the best of luck on Saturday night. Enjoy the experience. Seize the moment. You're fighting in Dublin. All the best, my friend.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. The notorious Conor McGregor, who'll be taking on Diego Brandão in the main event Saturday in Dublin, Ireland. And now we welcome back to the show a world champion, welterweight world champion in glory kickboxing, Joseph Bazooka Joel Valtellini. Mr. Valtellini, how are you today?
Oh, it's been awesome. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's been an exciting time in my career, so I'm excited to share it to all the listeners.
Now, does it still sound weird, world champion, or are you like, you know what, no, this is me, deal with it?
No, it hasn't set in yet. Like, I always have to kind of walk by the belt, touch it, make sure it's real. It's crazy. It's crazy to think that, you know, right now that I'm number one in the world, and that's what I dreamed for since that young kid in Taekwondo, and here it is. So it's still setting in, and I'm still trying to enjoy the moment and kind of see where this takes me in life.
When you think about the fact that you've achieved your dream, and then you realize, well, wait a second, now that I've reached the apex, do you look around and say, well, now there's a whole bunch of other mountains that I need to climb?
Oh, exactly. It's the way I look at myself as an athlete and martial artist. It's, you know, you always want to improve. You always want to get better. You know, it's right now I have a huge target on my back, and, you know, there's a lot of people who want what I have, so I'm kind of taking that mentality back into my training and kind of, you know, I would love to dominate this division for a long time.
You take a look at the bout versus Mark DeBonte and you realize, you know, the first two rounds were yours. Third round could have went either way. Second and or fourth and fifth round you could have gave to Mark. When you were sitting there and the referee was holding your hand, your judges' calls were being read, what was going through your mind?
You know, like when you're in that ring and you're fighting and you're putting, you know, your blood, sweat, tears, and everything you have on the line, it's your memory isn't the greatest. And, you know, I looked to my corner and they said, you know, you got three out of the five rounds. And, you know, so they gave me that little bit of confidence, but I was still nervous. And, you know, like you said, that fourth and fifth round really didn't go my way. And it was close. At that point, it was just kind of closing my eyes and kind of praying to whoever's up there that, you know, hopefully this belt comes home with me.
Well, there was no doubt in my mind watching the fight that you won 3-2. No ifs, ands, or buts. But when the scorecards were read, you heard what the commentators were saying. Well, you didn't hear. We heard what the commentators were saying. You saw a bit of the backlash online. Obviously, fans of Mark's that were coming across saying, listen, Mark won that fight. Did you feel any of that backlash afterwards? Did you think to yourself, uh-oh, there could be a rematch in play here?
You know what? Not really. I felt that, you know, looking back and watching the fight, that the fight was mine. And I think even with him, winning those last two rounds really made him, give him that extra confidence at the end. And, you know, looking back, even in that fourth round, I feel before, you know, he got that little knockdown there with his knee, I was still winning that round, and I was really dominating, you know, most of the fight, you know, with more effective striking, being a little bit more aggressive than he was, kind of landing the bigger shots. So really rewatching it really made me feel better. And there's a lot of articles, you know, they actually posted the judges' scorecards, and, you know, the article was based on basically when you watch a fight, you only really remember the last few rounds and you kind of forget what happened in the beginning. So this is a good example of how, you know, when you look at a fight, you really have to look at each round from the beginning. So, yeah, I'm confident. I'm happy. And whatever and whoever they throw at me next, I'll be ready. I'll be confident.
I didn't want to interject, but you are so bang on, Joseph, with the fact that even in the world of mixed martial arts, the world of boxing, the world of kickboxing, the short-term memory that many people have is they forget what happened in the beginning of the fight or even in the middle of the fight. They will always recall what happens at the end of the fight. As a fighter, when you think about that now, does that change your strategy at all?
You think about it, and you know what? I'm used to and I'm known for really finishing strong, so it's never been a problem with me. And again, looking at my professional record, and I usually don't go to decision. I'm a fighter that kind of bases my training camp, and kind of to finish fights. And I never like to leave, you know, my faith and my dreams in the hands of the judges. So I was kind of disappointed in the ending, but to me, I want to win every round, and starting from the first and the fifth, I go out to win every round, and you know, to make sure that there's no doubt at the end of the fight.
You're listening to UFC Central right now. On the line with us is Bazooka Joe. Follow him online at Bazooka Joe. Joseph Valtellini, world welterweight champion for Glory Kickboxing. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. And we both have Instagram accounts as well, so make sure you give us a follow there. Walk me through the moment when you dropped, you know, Devontae with that high kick. What were you thinking? Do you remember? Do you think to yourself, oh my God, is this going to end right now? This is awesome. Or it's like, no, got to play it smooth here.
I had a little bit of both. After that knockdown, man, I'd never hit anyone like that in my career. So hitting him, you know, nice with the shin, nice angle, nice placement, everything was perfect in the execution of that high kick. And I thought it was over. Going back to that corner, I was just hoping. And the way he fell, his head hit the canvas, I'm like, it's over. And I was kind of had that little excitement. And seeing him get up, and my first reaction was kind of just go, and kind of push it. But you know, I've made that mistake in the past, and I got caught. So I really tried to keep my composure and kind of finish him. And but I feel this is where his experience comes into play. He has this was his 100th kickboxing fight compared to my 14th. So I knew I really had to kind of stay focused. And I think that's where his experience came into the fight. Him being able to kind of stay composed, stay defensive, and kind of finish the third round. And you know, come out even hard in the fourth and the fifth round. And so, you know, kudos to a tough Mark Devontae. But, you know, I really hope and wish that fight finished at that point.
For many people that have never competed on a professional level, especially in a world title fight, you're fighting against a guy who's basically trained to take your head off, just like you're trained to take his head off. You finally drop him, or you drop him eventually in a fight, and you think to yourself, you know what, this is good, but then he gets back up. Does that suck the wind a little bit out of you, or do you switch gears and say, you know what, okay, I got my tool belt on, I'll take out the hammer, now I'm coming with a sledgehammer, or do you say, oh my goodness, I got to watch out with this guy?
Well, it's a tricky situation at that point. And you see a lot of fighters really, and especially being in a third round in a five-round fight, you really got to be careful. It's very important that a lot of people kind of go in there and kind of not really control the pace and their energy, and then all of a sudden, you know, they gas themselves out, and that's a problem as well. So I think it's about you need that balance, and you got to really kind of use that, you know, the smarts and make it very technical at that point. And because there's a lot of bad things can happen. And there's a lot of people who kind of play that rope and dope style, and they'll kind of throw that nice big overhand and catch you. And there's too many variables. So as I got more experience in my career, I've been able to kind of control myself and really make sure, you know, I stay defensive as well as pick the right shots to finish the fight.
Well, I don't think you've reached your potential. As silly as that sounds, you're a world champion. I don't think you've reached your potential just yet. I still think you have a year or so before you reach that. But there could be a rematch on the horizon. They're talking about Nicky Holsken, to my understanding here, a rematch from the fight you guys had in Tokyo, Japan. I think that was in December of last year. Is that something you want to, you're basically looking at and saying, you know what, that could be the next guy that I'm facing?
Well, like you said, that fight was in December, and it was in a tournament format. It was a four-man tournament for, you know, the tournament world champion, because each weight class has a tournament to determine the tournament champion as well if there is a world champion. So when we fought, it was the second fight in one night, and there was a lot of variables. He had a little bit more of a break than I had, and I had a little tougher first-round fight. So there was a lot of variables going into that fight, but we both kind of put it all on the line, and we actually were nominated and basically given Fight of the Year for kickboxing last year. So people want to see the fight. People want to see this fight, and, you know, that was kind of the talk even before this fight, that basically the winner should take on Nicky Holtzkin. So even before Mark, I was given Mark DeBonte as an opponent, and after that loss with Nicky in Japan, it was kind of going back to training and with the focus of how am I going to improve to beat Nicky Holtzkin, and it's still on my list. It's still on, you know, part of my improvement. It's on my team's mind, so we're ready for it.
Now, we've already seen you compete against him. If you had to make any adjustments, obviously without giving away a game plan, what do you have to do to defeat Nicky?
For me, it's kind of, again, with that experience of kind of keeping relaxed and keeping composed. That fight, for me, was kind of, I was being really stubborn, and our initial game plan going into that was kind of keep pushing him and kind of using my combinations, and he really picked up on that, and not having the power, you know, and the juice in the tank because I had the fight before and my low kicks weren't as powerful and weren't as landing as frequently. So I think this time around, having one opponent to focus on, just having Nicky Holtzkin, it's going to be a different fight.
Well, since you won the title on June 21st, what have you done? I mean, I'm sure you've gone away somewhere. I'm sure you've spent some time with the family. I'm sure you've done a bunch of things. But how has life treated you since you became a world champion?
To me, it's honestly, it's been relaxing and kind of just being able to share the moment with people who you kind of have to push out of the way, training for these fights. And again, working full-time and training full-time, it's kind of, it's tough to kind of keep all those people who support you, you know, in your life and keep talking to them. So as soon as I came back, I wanted to share the belt and the experience with everyone who kind of supports me on a daily basis, my friends, my family, my coworkers. So it's just been, again, enjoying the moment, you know, taking some time off and making sure that, you know, everything's prepared when I go back into full-time training.
When do you want to get back into full-time training?
Well, again, right now it's about still learning and, you know, I'm just working with technical things and kind of watching a lot of film and keep educating myself as a martial artist and, you know, improving that mental part of the game. But probably within a week or two, I'll start really trying to ramp things up and keep focused on, you know, dominating this welterweight division.
Do you have a schedule in mind as to when you think Glory may ask you to come back and start defending your title?
There's been no date set. And, you know, I know there's going to be a little bit of a break for us in the welterweight division with this title. It's been passed around, and Mark DeBonta beat Karapet for that title a few months before us, and thanks to the fans and supporters in kickboxing and around the world, were really pushing me to win that title, and that's how we got the fight. So I think the welterweight title has been passed around a little bit, and I think there's other weight classes that kind of have to have their world title fights put on display. So I'm ready. It's, for me, it's, I just want this little bit of time to keep improving and stay mentally sharp and focused and, you know, be the best athlete I can.
Well, between you and I, I think you pretty much know that I've eliminated as much pasta as I can out of my diet. Although I know we're both Italian and it's a staple, especially on Sundays, but I'm trying to keep my weight down. But how much pasta have you eaten since you became a world champ?
Oh, as soon as I came home, my mom knows that I want the lasagna, the pasta. And even my grandmother making the homemade pastas and different types of food for me. So I've been lucky to come home to a lot of food, and I kind of made the list, and before every camp, I have these cravings, and right now, having the time off, I'm just going place to place eating and kind of enjoying that part of my life as well now.
Well, whatever. The difference between you and I is if I eat pasta, I get fatter. You eat pasta, you probably just burn it off in 20 minutes, so we appreciate your time, man.
No, it's I wish it was that easy. I'm one of those people, I can put on a lot of weight, so that's probably my years of eating those pasta and breads and being that Italian, we can't stay away from the carbs, so that still kills me today.
It's our guilty pleasure, my friend. Listen, thank you very much for having the time. Please give my best to Crew Paul and everyone over at the gym, and I'll try and pay a visit real soon.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We'd love to kind of hold some pads and get some training in with you.
You're scaring me already, my friend.
Oh, you'll be good.
There you have it. Joseph Valtellini. I've been down this road on numerous occasions. 9 times out of 10, I get babied in the gym, but you just never know. But I will definitely take come up on that offer when a world champion wants to hold the pads for you, get a nice little workout in. I'm going to have to do it. All right, let's move forward here. Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Mike Bond from USA Today and MMA Junkie. We will break down the card that went down in Atlantic City last night and take a look ahead to Saturday's UFC Fight Pass card in Dublin, Ireland, with the aforementioned Conor McGregor taking on Diego Brandão in the main event. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central, and as always, a pleasure to be joined by Mike Bond right now. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Mike Bond MMA. Mike, obviously a spectacular night of fights in Atlantic City. 11 bouts, 9 finishes. I mean, what went through your mind as that event continued to progress and we saw some of those performances?
I mean, it just got better and better and better as it went on. There were some good fights to start out on the prelims, and then started building up, and obviously Cerrone ended it with that amazing head kick. So that has to be one of the best cards of the year so far.
Any performances? I mean, we talk about 9 finishes, but we look at some of these guys, the way they competed, and even the debut of the strawweights in the women's division. Anything that stood out for you, or a couple of them that you were like, wow, that's pretty impressive right there?
I mean, I thought the Lucas Martins Alex White fight was pretty intriguing. I mean, I had some personal investment there. I spent a bunch of time working on a story for Alex White going into that, talked with a lot of family members and trainers and stuff. So I was kind of invested in that one. To see Martins kind of be patient going in there and just picking shots and eventually landing the knockout, I mean, he's a pretty interesting character. His first 3 wins in the UFC, he's won at lightweight, featherweight, and bantamweight. So he's a guy he can go up and down. And I think he's finally going to settle into featherweight here. So I think he's a guy to look out for sure.
In terms of Alex White, though, are you surprised he wasn't able to set up his takedowns because of the way Lucas was, you know, sort of resetting himself and keeping his body erect where it kind of looks easier to go for the takedown?
A little bit. I mean, I thought that was an easy strategy for him to try to at least take it to the ground, but he never really fully committed to any of those takedown attempts, which was a little disappointing to see. But you know, he got in there and I think he tweeted out afterwards, he got a little too sucked into Martin's game, and that's what happens sometimes. You get caught up in those striking exchanges and you just get into the flow of the fight, and then he got caught and that was the end of it.
Claudia Gadella made her debut under the UFC banner. She's the first ever victor in terms of a women's strawweight bout in the UFC. I mean, she took on Tina Ladimaki, who obviously isn't even really ranked in the top 25 in women's strawweight, whereas Claudia is arguably top 3. You look at some sites, she's 5. Some sites, she's 2. But Claudia, in my opinion, Mike, is a contender in the division. This is someone that should be competing for whatever title comes out of the Ultimate Fighter. What were your thoughts on Claudia's performance? I personally thought, to be honest with you, Mike, that it wasn't going to go 3 rounds. I think it was going to last maybe a round and a half. It did go 3 rounds, so good on Tina. But your thoughts on Claudia's performance?
Yeah, I mean, I was with you on that. I thought, like a lot of people, it was probably going to end pretty early there. But, I mean, she got that 15 minutes. But, you know, for someone coming into the UFC who probably has that jitters and is looking to gain more experience, that's invaluable to go in there. And especially it was a dominant 15 minutes. She was never really in trouble at any point. Got hit with a few punches. But other than that, she just looked awesome from start to finish, and she is definitely someone to keep an eye on in that division. She'll probably be fighting for the belt, whoever comes off that top, the tough 20 show. Although, that's still a bit of time. Maybe she'll want to fight one more before then, but either way, she's obviously going to be one of the top girls in that division for a while now, and she looked awesome last night.
I think, in my opinion, I mean, you give me your thoughts. I think they're going to add Claudia to that Ultimate Fighter finale in December, only because there's going to be so much promo for all the ladies that are on the show and the strawweights on the Ultimate Fighter. There's going to be a championship fight likely on that card. And Claudia, in my opinion, if she takes another fight, why not just wait till December, get on that card, get showcased at the same time as the potential champion?
Yeah, that would make a ton of sense. You'd think that'd just be a layup for Sean Shelby to put that fight together. I mean, there's so many people she could fight. Any one of those girls who doesn't make it to the finals, I'm not sure, one of the semifinals, anything like that. There's tons of people she could fight. So I think that's a great idea and would make all the sense in the world. I don't see why she would want to have to wait till like sometime in the first portion of next year to challenge for the belt whenever the winner of that show is ready. It definitely would be the right idea for her to get another fight in.
You're listening to UFC Central. Online with us right now is Mike Bond. Make sure you follow him online at Mike Bond MMA. He works with MMA Junkie and USA Today, one of the best statisticians in the world of mixed martial arts. Some of his stats columns are absolutely fantastic. Make sure you check them out and get some numbers into your head before you start breaking down some fights. You look at the flyweight division, Mike. John Lineker emerges victorious yesterday. He fought to the bitter end, gets the finish, 9 seconds left in the fight. A great performance, and of course there was talk that could he slide in there ahead of Carriasso versus Demetrius Johnson. That's something many of us would like to see. Unfortunately, tickets went on sale for that event already. Is John Lineker, do you think, next in line to take on the winner of Carriasso Johnson, or especially if Johnson emerges victorious?
I mean, you could easily make that case, but there's a lot of guys right now. I mean, or maybe not a lot, but we also have the Ian McCall and Brad Pickett winner. I don't know if we'll talk about that later, but that's another guy who's right there. I think right now there's maybe a little bit of trust issues still with Lineker. He made weight this time. He looked great in doing so. His cardio looked really sharp last night. He didn't seem to gas out at all, and as you mentioned, got that finish with 10 seconds left in the third. So he's clearly taking steps in the right direction, but maybe they want to see him prove himself, make weight one more time against the guy, because Alptek and Ozkulic, she's a good fighter, but he's not a top 10 flyweight, so I think they need to put him in there, maybe give him a fight against, there's a few guys hanging out there, maybe, I can't think off the top of my head, but there's a lot of good options for him, and he needs one more win, and then I think he could fly in that fight with Johnson, but I think at this point, the winner of McCall and Brad Pickett are ahead of him.
Well, I'd like to see a rematch with Ali Bagutinov, but I don't think Ali would be competing for quite some time due to his suspension, so I hear exactly what you're saying. When I was over in Jersey, or actually New York, Ray Longo was trying to sell me on Aljamain Sterling, and then I had Ally Aquinta pull me aside and say, no, you need to pay attention to Aljamain because this guy's the real deal. Well, we saw what happened yesterday versus Hugo Viana. He looked absolutely fantastic. The kid is looking amazing. Are you sold on him already? Because people are already calling the Funk Master the next John Jones. I'm not buying that, but are you sold on him yet?
I mean, I'm not buying that either, but he is damn impressive, man. I mean, Hugo Viana, another guy, maybe not top 10 in the division, but he's still a very formidable opponent, very skilled, and he can hold his own against pretty much anyone in that weight class. And Sterling just went in there and pretty much ran him over. I mean, that third round, it was so impressive. There was, what, like 2 minutes left? He could have easily just rode out the round. He had top position, dominant position. Didn't need to take any risk by trying to go for the finish. But no, he didn't decide to leave it up to the judges. He went for that finish. And that's the kind of stuff Dana White and everyone at the UFC loves to see, a guy that is just going to put himself out there and take risks to go for the finish. And he's a serious prospect, man. He seems to have all the physical gifts. He seems to be right there mentally. He trains out of an amazing camp. So I think he's a guy, I mean, John Jones, probably need to slow your roll a little bit on that, but he is only 24 and the sky's the limit for him. So I'm very, very excited to see what happens with him going forward, and especially at bantamweight, where it's just not a very deep weight class. They need guys like him that are coming up undefeated, rising through the ranks, and he's definitely someone to keep an eye on.
Edson Barboza and Evan Dunham. I mean, look, heading into this fight here, the one thing I was profiling was the fact that it's a must-win for both guys, despite Edson being so young, and we saw what happened with Evan Dunham. He's now lost 3 straight, 4 of his last 5. Do you think that's the end of this chapter in the octagon for Evan Dunham?
I hope not, because even back in the day, I remember before I really got into this as a media member, Evan Dunham was always one of my favorite lightweights to watch. I remember that fight with Sean Sherk where he just got absolutely ripped off for his first loss, and ever since that moment, it's kind of just seemed to be downhill for him, or up and down, and obviously this latest streak isn't very well, but I mean, usually I'd say a couple of years ago, this little streak that he's on of losses, lost 4 or 5, would probably get him released from the UFC, but in this day and age, kind of a new UFC that we're seeing, I wouldn't be surprised to see him give him another fight. He still has a name, he's obviously a skilled fighter. I don't think they'd really want to send him off to any of the other organizations or let them pick him up. So I think he's another guy that he'll probably stick around for one more, but obviously in a very, very desperate need of a win.
Edson Barboza, have you put on your Joel Silva shoes yet?
For him, I'm working on it right now, but there's so many guys out there. I mean, the fight that I really wanted to see, which I think would be a good one, would be him and Michael Johnson. I mean, I know Johnson just had to pull out of that fight with Josh Thompson next weekend for the Fox event, but if he's not out for too long, I think that would be a really fun matchup. But you just look at that lightweight division, man. So many good guys in there. You could throw him in there against anyone in the top 15, and it would be a really good fight. But, I mean, he's already had 10 fights in the UFC. He's fought quite a few of those guys who are hanging around that are relevant in the division. So I think the funnest matchup at this point would be him and Johnson. They're both kind of been on a nice roll lately. Obviously, Barboza had the setback with Cerrone, but other than that, he's looked fantastic lately. So I think that would be a good fight for him.
Well, speaking of fun fights and guys on a roll, Conor McGregor will be headlining the show on Saturday in Dublin, Ireland, his hometown, his home country. This is a guy that I've spoken with on Dana White on numerous occasions that has that it factor, the Chael Sonnen, the Muhammad Ali, the Floyd Mayweather, a guy that gets hype, a guy that gets promotion. He dresses to impress, and he gets the job done in the octagon. But this is a lot of pressure for a young guy, only in his third fight and competing in a main event. I mean, your thoughts on Conor McGregor in general, as well as that fight versus Diego Brandão on Saturday night?
Yeah, I mean, he's just one of those guys. I got the chance to speak with him earlier this week, and he just talks about everything. He seems so calm, composed. He says everything so matter-of-factly that it's just there's no doubt in his mind whatsoever. And that's really impressive to see from a guy who's so young and, as you said, such a pressure-filled situation fighting in his home country, hometown. So this is obviously a big moment for him. He can't afford to come out there and put on anything but an exceptional performance. He needs to go and just put Diego Brandão away that he's been saying he's going to in every interview. So I don't know. It's an interesting situation to see, just because we want to know if this guy's the real deal or not. We need someone like him so badly in the sport right now that's craving for stars. And if he can be this guy who comes in and talks the talk and walks the walk, doesn't get much better than that. So this is a huge fight for him. Brandão is no pushover. I've kind of seen reports online that he's looking a little big this week, maybe not in the best shape, which would be unfortunate, but I think this is McGregor's moment, and if he fights his fight, this should be a win for him.
In analyzing Conor McGregor, his style, and especially the potential superstar that he can become, especially the fact that, you know, we're only going to see him on Fight Pass. We're eventually going to see him headline something, be it a Fox show or Ultimate Fight Night. Eventually, he's going to get to pay-per-view. He's already talking about defending his title. He's not even a champion yet, but he's defending his title in a stadium in Ireland. I mean, that's obviously a pipe dream right now. But at the same time, like you said, this is what the UFC needs right now. This is a superstar waiting to happen. When I look at Conor McGregor, Mike, I think to myself, featherweight champion, let's just say featherweight champion, hypothetically, okay? You know, Jose Aldo Jr. is the champion right now, but he really hasn't put the featherweight division on the map like one would assume a world champion could do. I'm assuming the featherweight division is absolutely massive in Brazil because he is the world champion. But a guy like Conor McGregor, I think, could take the division to a whole new level. Agree or disagree with the fact that if this guy was to become a champion, people would be talking about the 145-pound weight class just like they would talk about welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, there is so many good guys in that division, too. You just look at the top 15, top 10 of that weight class, and it's amazing. But none of these guys really stand out and have a way of making people care about them. They're fun fighters, but Conor McGregor just has that X factor that we've seen kind of with superstars in the past. And he can go in there and he can do everything that he says he's going to do and win the belt and do all these grand aspirations that he has. I mean, it would be so, so big for the UFC. They need guys like him in the lighter weight classes, especially. I mean, there's not a ton of guys who have really put those weight classes on the map. Obviously, BJ Penn and lightweight and all that kind of stuff. But really, from featherweight below, they're hurting for that. I mean, we obviously have all heard the reports of Demetrius Johnson's pay-per-view numbers for UFC 174, not that great. So, I mean, they need guys to boost those numbers. And Conor McGregor is someone who has the personality to come in there and sell pay-per-views, and he can fight it up to the way he talks. I mean, it's huge for the UFC.
on the line right now with Mike Bond. Follow Mike online via Twitter at Mike Bond MMA. The Bond is spelled B-O-H-N. Follow him on Instagram as well. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Mike works with USA Today and MMA Junkie. Mike, Conor McGregor's teammate Gunnar Nelson, a guy that many of us have been talking about for quite some time, the potential to be a top 10 fighter in the blink of an eye, top 5 within 2 fights, and according to Conor McGregor, he can beat the current champion in Johnny Hendricks. He's already talking about Gunnar Nelson as a world champion. When you look at Gunnar Nelson, who's taking on Zach Cummings in the co-main event on Saturday, I look at a guy who's extremely stoic, extremely calm, a guy that I wish would actually come out more, but he's from Iceland, according to Conor, and he's just so calm, so quiet. What do you see as the future for Gunnar Nelson?
I mean, he's like the anti-Conor McGregor, right? He's complete polar opposite in terms of personality. He's just quiet, reserved, lets his fighting do the talking, doesn't really make any of those bold statements. But he's good, man. I mean, he obviously hasn't tested himself against those top 10 guys, but if you look at the guys he has beat and how he's been able to beat them, it's very, very impressive. So he goes in there. This is a tough test for him against Zach Cummings. I think everyone wishes the original fight with Ryan LaFlair was still happening, but this is still a good matchup. And Gunnar Nelson is a guy, he's an amazing grappler, has very unorthodox stand-up, and he can go in there. If he puts some wins together and makes a run toward the top, he definitely has the skill. But personality, I mean, there's a little bit to be desired. It's one of those interesting things that if you do listen to him talk, he says some very well-thought, compelling stuff, but it just doesn't really draw you in the way Conor McGregor would. But he's got the skill, man. He's one of those guys that if he keeps developing at the pace he is, he is definitely championship material.
You mentioned the flyweight belt taking place on Saturday as well. Brad Pickett taking on Ian McCall. I'm going to give the edge to Ian McCall in this fight here because I think he's got just that style that's going to give Pickett just a little bit fits, although Pickett's striking is absolutely fantastic. You mentioned it's a pivotal bout. This could see the next challenger at flyweight, the next guy to compete for the title. Break it down for us.
This is a really fun fight. Brad Pickett didn't look great in his flyweight debut against Neil Siri earlier this year, but who knows, with that first weight cut going down to flyweight, people always struggle with that, and Pickett is a big guy for that weight class. So hopefully this time he's kind of got it a little better, will perform a little better, and just have the cardio, all that stuff. But in terms of just an outright matchup, this is super interesting. They're both good on the feet, both good everywhere. The wrestling, Ian McCall says he thinks his wrestling is going to be a big factor in this fight. He says he's not going to let a Brit out-wrestle him, so I think there's a little bit of that competitive spirit there. But Ian McCall is another guy. His UFC run at this point has just been a little bit disappointing. You always wonder what his career would be like at this point if that Demetrius Johnson fight, the first one, was scored properly in that fourth round, ended up happening. He probably would have won. He was controlling the action in that fight, and his career would probably be at a different path. But since then, he's just had injuries or fight cancellations or this and that, and it's just been tough for him to finally get on a roll. But it seems like now he's in the right place. He finally has the chance to build that momentum. It seems like a really good fight for him. He can stay standing, take it to the ground, kind of do whatever he wants there. And this is a really fun fight and probably fight of the night on that card. And as you said, probably going to help us figure out who the next challenger is in the flyweight division there. So just a huge, huge fight, probably the most relevant fight on that card in terms of title contention and all that kind of stuff. So really looking forward to that one.
Forgot to ask you one question if we can circle back to yesterday's event. Obviously in the main event, Donald Cowboy Cerrone defeating Jim Miller. What's next for Cowboy? I mean, there's a couple of options for him. He wants a fight. He already told, he said it in the post-fight press conference, let's go UFC, give me my next fight. And I think it's absolutely insane. This guy doesn't want to take any time off. Mind you, when he does take time off, he's on some sort of jet ski or knee boarding or something like that. But he already called out Khabib Nurmagomedov. Do you think that's the fight the UFC puts on?
I think it has to. I mean, Khabib is legit, probably one of the top 3 contenders in that division. The guy's undefeated, I think 22-0, 6-0 in the UFC, and he needs one of those top contender fights. And there's no one out there that's asking to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov, and Donald Cerrone is. So I think it's one of those situations. I mean, the UFC obviously has their own ways of doing matchmaking and everything like that, but if someone's going to be calling out Khabib, I think you don't really have many options but to make that fight. There's no one out there wanting him, but you need to give him a top contender. And Cerrone's obviously right there. He's won 4 in a row. looked damn impressive doing it. I think he's finished everyone in that stretch. So that's a legit number one contenders fight right there. So I think they need to do that one, and it's going to be a great fight. I really look forward to that one, and I think that one probably figures out your number one contender for whenever Pettis and Melendez are done coaching the Ultimate Fighter show and then fight for the belt after that.
We want to thank you very much for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck over the weekend. It's going to be a busy one, but thank you very much for your time, Mike.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
There you have it, Mike Bond. Special thanks to Mike and, of course, Conor McGregor and Joseph Valtellini for joining us on the show this week. That's a wrap, folks. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.